Israel's savage strikes on the Gaza Strip claimed the lives of hundreds of Palestinian children, as the death toll now exceeds 1,500. The Iranian cities of Mashhad, Shiraz, capital Tehran, Abadan, Baghdad, Doha, Yemen are thronging the streets to condemn Israeli atrocities being committed in the besieged Gaza Strip. Iran's foreign minister says resistance access may open new fronts against Israel if regime's war crimes continue in the Gaza Strip. Hello, everybody, and a very warm welcome to World News. In our top story, the death toll from Israel's savage attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip continues to rise as the regime carries out early morning strikes on the Palestinian territory. According to Gaza's health ministry, more than 1,500 Palestinians have been killed since attacks began Saturday. Around 800 have been women and children. Thousands have also been injured, while more than 420,000 Gazans have been displaced. Israeli military says it's called on all residents in Gaza City to evacuate their homes and head south of the territory. Military says it will continue to operate significantly in the city in the following days. In the meantime, human rights groups have confirmed that the regime has used white phosphorus munitions in attacks on Gaza. The territory remains under Israel's complete siege with no access to electricity, water, food, and medicine. Israel started this onslaught after Gaza-based resistance groups launched a multi-front operation against the Israeli regime. The Iranian cities of Mashhad, Shiraz, the capital Tehran, Abadan, Baghdad, Doha, Yemen, today scores of pro-Palestinian activists are thronging the streets to condemn Israeli atrocities being committed. Many Arab leaders and the Arab League have called the genocide and massacres being committed in the besieged Gaza Strip. Over 1,500 people have been killed, over 500 children. I want to correct myself earlier. I said over 700 women, but it's over 280 women there. Out of the over half of that number are just the women and children. Over the 2,500 structures have been leveled and declared uninhabitable by Palestinian sources there on the ground in Gaza. Over 26,000 structures have been partially or seriously damaged. Israeli authorities said they're going to significantly increase their attacks on Gaza in the days to come. They've asked northern Gazans to flee southward as they want to conduct apparently a carpet bombing campaign. Some sources say there could even be a possible ground invasion involved. We do not know at this point what the regime is planning for Gaza, but obviously it is not good because up until this point it's targeted strictly civilian infrastructure, leading to civilian deaths. And we cannot leave out this this is against humanitarian international law and international humanitarian law, using for tools of warfare, utilizing food, water, and medicine, exactly what the regime is doing in the besieged Gaza Strip, along with electricity. So there's no food, power, medicine, or water right now for Gazans while bombs are raining down on their heads. Joining us now from the Iranian capital Tehran is our own Gisu Misha Ahmadi. What can you tell us? It seems like we're experiencing now, witnessing thousands of people in the streets of Tehran.
There are immense crowds on the streets in the capital, Tehran. All of them have come out to express their support for the Palestinians fighting for their freedom. They want their voices to be heard. It is interesting, Danny, to see so many younger people here. I've talked to children as young as 7 or 8 years old who are quite aware of the situation there, and they want to offer the support to Palestinian kids. And I've also met managed to talk to a large number of people who believe that because they want to have their voices heard, they need to say this in English, just because they know that their voices will be muffled by mainstream media. So right now I have with me one of these people, a young woman who is with me, a mother of two, who has come out today with her family to show her support. So tell us, what brings you here?
I've come here with my husband and my two little kids to support women in Palestine, to support kids under the rebels, and we are here to say that you are not alone, sisters.
Okay, and what is the message that you want to send to these mothers and kids?
Yeah, ladies, you are not alone, and we support you here. As our Supreme Leader has quoted that Zionism will not see 25 years later. So we are here to say that we are stand by you until the end.
Thank you very much. There's also Danny, an older gentleman who is here with us, who also wants to send his message to the international community. So, sir, tell us, why are you here?
My name is Azizullah Khovan. We have participated in this demonstration in order to say that Palestine, Yemen, Syria are not alone. The Israel is a gland of cancer. It must be eradicated from the all of the world. Therefore, Israel, America are oppressor, and Yemen, Palestine, Syria is oppressed.
Thank you very much. Well, like I said, Danny, most of the people who are here, the strong message that they want to send is focused on the fact that mainstream media is trying to change the place of the oppressor and the oppressed. They are offering their support for Palestinians who are the real oppressed people in this war.
Yisu, that was really good. Thank you for getting some of these people out there to share their thoughts with us. I hope you can do that some more. I guess I believe we are joined now by Sayed Mudassir Rezvi, executive member at the Assembly of Scholars of Jammu and Kashmir, joining us out of Srinagar. Hello, Sayed. Pleasure to have you on the program, sir. I was just sharing with the plight of the women and children of Gaza. At night, they are in darkness. In the day, they are in the cold and the dark, and they have no access to food, water, and medicine. And here we are, turning the TV on corporate Western media, and they're still talking about what happened to Israelis 6 days ago, and very, very little about what is happening to Palestinians right this very moment.
I pay my sincere condolences to all oppressed people, particularly the children, women of Gaza. As you know, the world has turned its blind eye towards the oppression which is happening in the Gaza these days. You see, there is blackout by the Western media, which is a sort of war strategy by those Zionist powers who are using it as a war strategy to cut the truth in the media, to show blindness towards the happening, which is cruelty done to the people of Gaza, to the people of Palestine. You see, this is the thing which people understand in the world, that media is used as a tool, media is used as a corrupt criminal silencing the oppressed people. And that is why more and more people are standing against those criminal power. See, people are there from last few days without water, without medicine, without food, particularly the children and women. What is the fun of this thing? That is actually they are used as a strategy, they are used as a tool to crunch those innocent voices by cutting all the basic human necessities, by cutting the basic human values and basic human rights, and world decides, and all those social media, all those Western media, they are acting as a tool to defend those oppressors.
Okay, thank you, Sayed. Pleasure to have you for this extended coverage protests that we're witnessing throughout the Iranian capital. Other major Iranian cities, in the capital, Sana'a in Yemen, UK, France, the Netherlands, Los Angeles, New York in the States, Ireland, Iran, Iraq, I mentioned Yemen, multiple American universities, Toronto, Vancouver, the list goes on. There have been dozens upon dozens of worldwide demonstrations in support of Palestinians as bombs rain down on the women and children of Gaza. Palestinian resistance groups had launched more rockets toward occupied territories. The Hamas resistance movement says rockets were fired toward Tel Aviv in response to the killing of civilians in Gaza. According to Israeli media, multiple rockets fell in northern Israel, including Netanya and Hadera. Southern cities of Beersheba, Ashkelon, and Ashdod have also been targeted. Sirens sounded in the city of Sderot as well. According to Israeli military, 1,300 people have been killed since Hamas launched its operation Saturday. Nearly 300 of them are soldiers. Number of injured is 3,300. Israel, meanwhile, is massing troops and tanks near the Gaza fence. Israeli forces and settlers have killed five more Palestinians during violent raids across the occupied West Bank. According to Palestinian media, regime forces fatally shot a 17-year-old teenager in Qalqilya. They first shot him in the back and then prevented his transport to a low area hospital. Two women were also killed by Israeli forces in separate incidents in Ramallah. Israeli settlers also shot and killed a Palestinian man and his son in an ambush just south of Nablus. New fatalities bring number of Palestinians killed by regime forces in the occupied West Bank since Saturday to 36. Over 650 have also been wounded. And joining us from Ramallah is Mona Candil for an update. Hello, Mona. Hope you're safe and doing well. We're going beyond three dozen fatalities just in the occupied West Bank in a few short days. Mona, what can you tell us?
Unfortunately, yesterday, seven Palestinians had been killed by the Israeli forces and the Israeli settlers. As you have mentioned, two Palestinians, a father and his son, were shot by Israeli settlers while taking part in funeral procession of two more Palestinians had been killed one day earlier in the village of Qusra near Nablus. Later, a Palestinian woman was killed in the occupied West Bank at the entrance of the village of Ain Yabrud. She was returning back home, with her son, when in their vehicle, when the Israeli forces opened fire at their vehicle, wounding her son and killing this lady while she was with her son inside their vehicle, trying to enter their village, Deir Jrir. Later, Israeli forces also opened fire at another Palestinian, this time in the village of Deir Bzia. He was also in his vehicle and trying to return back to his home in the village of Deir Bzia when the Israeli forces opened fire and killed him. In the West Bank city of Qalqilya, northern the occupied West Bank, two more Palestinians had been shot by the Israeli forces in separate incidents in Nabi Ilyas as well as in Jayus, where the Israeli forces opened fire at Palestinians had been taking part in protests to condemn the Israeli massacres and the airstrikes being carried out in the Gaza Strip. The seventh Palestinian who was killed yesterday was in Al-Quds. This time, a young Palestinian in Al-Quds opened fire at the police station, the Israeli police station in Al-Quds. The Israeli forces followed him, clashed with this young man, Khalid Al-Muhtasib, shot him dead. He was from the village of Beit Hanina. So we are speaking about seven Palestinians had been killed yesterday. This brings the number of the people who had been killed since Saturday in the occupied West Bank to 36. And as you have mentioned, 650 others had been wounded. Today, there are calls for the Palestinians to take part in a protest rally, a day of anger had been declared a Friday, people would be taking part in protests following the Friday prayers. There are calls on the people also to go to Al-Aqsa Mosque. However, we have to mention that since Saturday, all roads leading to Al-Aqsa Mosque, let's say, had been closed by the Israeli forces. So people in Al-Quds would not be even easily for them to reach Al-Aqsa Mosque. Speaking about the people in the West Bank, usually people had to get Israeli-issued permits to enter Al-Quds. However, now even those who have the permits are prevented because the Colombia military checkpoint had been sealed off by the Israelis. The Israelis are not allowing the people, even those with Al-Quds or Jerusalem ID, are not allowed to enter Al-Quds via the Colombia crossing. Checkpoints between the Palestinian areas had been also closed. And that's why when yesterday people tried to go back to their homes, they were shot and killed at the military checkpoints. Anyways, Palestinians today fear that there is an Israeli plan to prevent the people from transportation, from going and gathering in areas, taking part in protest and demonstrations, from marching towards the Israeli military checkpoints in order not to clash with the Israeli forces, in order not to hold rallies in support of the Gaza Strip, to condemn and demand the world to interfere and immediately stop the Israeli crimes being carried out against the people of Gaza.
All right. Thank you, Mona. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. Appreciate your update there. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign minister says if Israel's war crimes continue against the Palestinian people, it is possible for resistance access to open new fronts against the regime. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remark upon arrival in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. He added, displacing thousands of Palestinians and cutting their access to water, electricity, food, and medicine are organized war crimes committed by the Israeli regime. Amir Abdullahian said the Israeli regime and its backers will be responsible for the consequences of their crimes. Top Iranian diplomat also discussed Gaza developments with Lebanese Prime Minister Najib Mikati. Amir Abdullahian arrived in Beirut from Iraq as part of a regional tour that will also take him to Syria. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Shamseddin Mohammad, known better by his pen name Hafiz of Shiraz, is one of the most beloved of Iranian poets. If a book of poetry is to be found in an Iranian home, it is likely to be the Divan of Hafiz or Hafiz's collected poems. By tradition, Iranian people read Hafiz in private, in public, and on different national occasions, such as Nowruz, the Iranian New Year, or Yalda Night, an Asian festival in Iran celebrated in the winter solstice. In a world that he has created, Hafiz shares his views on humanity, tells us about his philosophical musings, moral precepts, the nature of love, life, and destiny, and encourages to make the most of the moment, not in a dry, didactic way, but through his fertile imagination, polished diction, best choice of words, and melodious expressions. The Iranian people take great pride in their 14th century poet and celebrate a national day in his loving memory. The 20th of Mehr on the Iranian calendar, which usually falls on October 12th, is celebrated annually as Hafiz Day. Many scholars, writers, and Hafiz lovers from around the world come to Iran on this day to mark the occasion at Hafiz's tomb in Shiraz. Shamseddin Mohammad gained his sobriquet Hafiz, literally meaning a person who knows something important by heart, because he could recite the Holy Quran completely by heart in 14 different ways. Hafiz wrote some 500 ghazals or sonnets over a period of 50 years, on average around 10 sonnets a year. His poems have been the subject of so much analysis, commentary, and interpretation. One of the Iranian admirers of Hafiz is Behruz Gharibpour, an Iranian theater director and pioneer of traditional Persian puppet theater.
I've said many times that Hafiz is the custodian of Iran's DNA. You know that the characteristic of DNA is that it can store information for a long time, and I believe that from Hafiz's Diwan we can understand many of our cultural and historical issues. His Diwan is not merely a collection of romantic poems. Hafiz lived during the reign of Amir Mubarizuddin, a man who pretended to be religious, but was a hypocrite indeed. He was cruel to others if they didn't observe Islamic rules, but when it came to himself, he was not that strict.
Hafiz's book is widely used in bibliomancy, or what is called fal in Iran. It is an ancient tradition when the reader asks Hafiz for advice when facing a difficulty or in an important juncture in life, and treats the book like an oracle. After all, the nickname for Hafiz is Lisanul Ghaib, which means the tongue of the unseen. Let's see what Hafiz sees. یوسف گمگشت باز آید به کنعان غم مخور کلبه احزان شود روزی گلستان غم مخور Your lost Joseph will return to Canaan, do not grieve. This house of sorrows will become a garden, do not grieve.
You tell me why you want to take part in the commemoration ceremony of Hafiz. Why Hafiz and why not other poets? Why are you so passionate about Hafiz but not about Bidil Dehlavi, who is also a great poet? Why don't we commemorate Bidil but we commemorate Hafiz?
To know more, we met with Dr. Tawfiq Subhani, a prolific writer and a professor of Persian language and literature.
Hafiz was a man of learning. He expressed many things in his poems, a great variety of subject matters. You may have noticed, young people love Hafiz. So do old people. When a common person reads Hafiz, they can enjoy it. When a scholar reads Hafiz, they also enjoy it. Everyone thinks that they can appreciate Hafiz, and this is the main feature of Hafiz's poems.
In the presence of Professor Subhani, we consulted Hafiz by opening his divan.
Now let's open Hafiz's divan. He might offer us a poem having to do with the current situation. I suggest you open the book, but before it, please utter what we say before opening the book. Oh, Hafiz of Shiraz, look upon us in favor. Then open Hafiz and let's see what he says.
مفتی
During the reign of a forgiving ruler, both Hafez and Mufti are emboldened to drink. It's self-evident, isn't it?
His ghazals consist of generally self-contained lines, bound together by a single meter, a single rhyme, and sometimes a radif, that is a word or a phrase repeated at the end of each line. The first line usually sets the mood of each poem, but this is hardly followed through in all the lines. This is Dr. Ahmad Tamimdari, a full professor of Persian language and literature at Allame University. He told us an essential difference between Eastern and Western poetry.
بله شعر غربی با شعر شرقی یکی از دانشمندان غربی در کتابی که خود من ترجمه کردم
In his book Persian Poetry in England and America, John D. Yohannan writes that Western poetry is written in the form of a letter, which means that all its parts are connected step by step. But in Eastern poetry, especially in the sonnet, the poet deals with various themes. A typical Eastern poem has a circular form. He says that Oriental poetry has a central core from where various themes emanate. It is true that Eastern poems are psychologically and intellectually related to each other, but they appear to be unrelated on the surface. You might even change the arrangement of lines in Eastern poetry sometimes, but you cannot do this in Western poems. It is one of the differences between Eastern and Western poetry.
The thought or sentiment in other lines is determined by several factors, such as the general mood or motivation involved in composing the ghazal, or even a consideration of the musical mode or melody intended for each line, as the ghazals of Hafiz seem to have been written to be sung as well as read. Hafiz's poetry possesses the ability to comfort, enliven, and enrich those in need. A ghazal or sonnet, by definition, has love as its main subject matter. In his ghazals, Hafiz sings with great passion of the ecstasy of love, the unmatched beauty of the beloved, the pains of separation, the rare pleasure of union, and the disdain of the beloved. Dr. Tamimdari told us it's naive to take wine, a motive in Hafiz's poems, at face value.
از معلومه که بین آب انگور و بین شراب طهور الهی متفاوت
So it is clear that Hafiz differentiates between grape wine and divine pure wine, and these two are different from each other. If we assume that the meaning of wine in Hafiz's poems is a drink that causes all kinds of diseases, it is really very bad taste. There is nothing poetic about it. It must be a bad taste for a great poet like Hafiz to discuss only alcoholic drinks, which is a harmful thing. So something else must be behind it. It must be metaphoric.
It would be a mistake, however, to think that love is the major theme of Hafiz's poems. Hafiz includes in his ghazals a theme that is not lyrical at all and a far cry from love poetry. About the major theme of Hafiz's poems. Now, he has chosen the literary genre of lyric poetry or ghazal, which is famously used to express the concept of love. Do you think this is the case, that the major theme of Hafiz's poems is love, or is it something beyond?
ببینید این که میگم غزل فقط برای عشق گفته شده
Some might believe ghazals deal with love, but it is not like that. Of course, one of the themes of the ghazal is love. This poetic form, when used by Hafiz, also contains themes related to wisdom, philosophy, Quranic verses, and hadith. The reason why Hafiz's poems have been popular in the world throughout history is that you can find in his poems, in addition to love, themes related to life, human experience, and social criticism, and so on.
As a man of learning with reformist ambitions, Hafez was a critic of the ills of his society. He was determined to expose the hypocrisy of all those who had set themselves up as guardians, judges, and examples of moral correctness. In his poems, he attacks the false figures of religious authority. واعظ شهر چو عشق ملک و شهنه گزید، من اگر مهر نگاری بگزینم چه شود؟ Since the city's preacher has chosen to love the prince and the police chief, what if I have chosen to love a pretty face? Hafez's satire often takes a humorous turn through the use of irony and ridicule. فقیه مدرسه دیم است بود و فتوا داد که می حرام ولی به زمال اوقاف است. The seminary scholar was drunk yesterday and made a ruling that wine is forbidden but not so bad as dipping into the funds of religious endowments.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There are lines that show how familiar Hafez is with Islamic teachings. After all, he is a Muslim, brought up in a Muslim environment, educated in traditional religious schools, and immersed in Islamic culture. What distinguishes Hafez from other poets?
Hafez says it is love for humanity that might help you out. Otherwise, you would be a loser, and if you, like Hafez, know the Quran by heart in 14 different ways. You ask me why we should read Hafez. My answer is look at Daesh. They have represented, through wrongfully, a cruel image of Islam, as Amir Mubarak al-Din did. So time has not changed that much in this regard.
Gharibpour brought Hafez's marionette opera to stage more than a decade ago. In it, he tried to offer what he called the real image of the Persian poet, a Muslim in the real sense of the word, a man with a heart of gold.
Hafez knew the Iranian nation inside out. He can learn from Hafez how to love humanity, how to avoid hypocrisy, and how to adore the world. I think the Hafez I'm talking about is unknown to many. Some might think he was a materialist. At the opposite end of the spectrum, some might say that his divan is in fact the Quran in verse. That is, everything he says comes directly from the Holy Quran. I think Hafez is none of them. He was a Muslim, a real Muslim, not the one he manifested in Daesh and the like. I have a dramatic point of view to the whole story. Let me explain why I decided to work on Hafez through the medium of opera. It is very regrettable that Hafez could not be translated because his language is musical and therefore much is lost in translation. So I adopted a musical language, that is opera, to preserve his musical language.
A Muslim poet living in the 14th century, could his poems be interesting enough for the rest of the world? Johann Wolfgang von Goethe says yes. The most renowned poet of German literature was deeply interested in Hafez's poems. Goethe first took interest in Hafez when composing romantic poems, but later on it was the mystical aspects of Hafez's poems that attracted him. The influence of Hafez on Goethe was so deep that he named a collection of his poems the West Eastern Divan. Goethe famously said, Hafez has no peer.
As for Hafez and the question that if you really need to read Hafez, I should say that Hafez can help you change your worldview for the better. His poems are so deep that Goethe says, I wish I was a student of Hafez as a student. When Hafez says, "Arise, O cupbearer, rise and bring to lips that are thirsting the bowl they praise, for it seemed that love was an easy thing, but my feet have fallen on difficult ways." The meaning of these lines could be understood 50 centuries from now. Everyone can understand that it is difficult to remain in love because you need to remain honest, kind, and self-sacrificing. When you understand this point, it means Hafez is still alive and is still relevant to this time as well.
In the United States, to Ralph Waldo Emerson, Hafez was one of the seven literary wonders of the world. As Emerson said of Hafez, "He fears nothing, he sees too far, he sees throughout. Such is the only man I wish to see or be." And Emerson gave Hafez that famous compliment, "Hafez is a poet for poets." What is the standing or the status of Hafez in English-speaking countries? Can you name certain literary scholars that have been inspired or perhaps impacted by Hafez?
In England, many poets paid attention to Hafez's poetry, as many poets did later in the United States. For example, in America, one of the greatest poets that you must have heard of is Ralph Waldo Emerson in the 18th century, who was the national poet at that time. He used many of Hafez's themes to compose his own poems. Or Benjamin Franklin is another famous person influenced by Hafez. In Persian poetry in England and America, which I've translated into Farsi, nearly 500 poets and writers have been mentioned as those influenced by Persian poetry, especially by Hafez's poetry.
Hafez was also admired by such diverse notables as Nietzsche and Arthur Conan Doyle. Garcia Lorca praised the poet. German composer Johannes Brahms was so touched by Hafez's poems that he used several of them in his compositions. And even Queen Victoria reportedly consulted Hafez in times of need. The list of his famous admirers goes on and on. In hundreds of ways, Hafez addresses what impedes us from living a more fulfilled life, giving us hope even in the worst of times. The 14th century poet's work is not just beautiful, it is useful too. Hafez passed away in late 1388 or early 1389 at the age of 69. His memory lives on, as his poems still mesmerize the world. That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. I hope you enjoyed this edition and found it inspiring. Please do tune in same time next week and each week after. Don't forget to leave your comments and topic requests. Bye for now.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim. Din al-Islam, din.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, in which we try to ask and answer some of the questions related to the Islamic laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before we embark on our episode, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
My first question, Sheikh, is that, well, what are the things that make the prayers void?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, this is a question which needs a lengthy answer because there are different things which make the prayer void. For example, if one of the conditions of which are required for the validity of wudu is not fulfilled, then the prayer becomes void. And there are many things which are required for wudu. For example, when you make wudu, you should make wudu with pure water. And then the water should not be usurped. And then, of course, you should not have past wind during the wudu, because mm-hmm. if these are those things which invalidate wudu, if they are not fulfilled, if they are not met, then the prayer becomes void. Okay, for example, if your cloth is not clean, it's mm-hmm. not pure. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you're wearing clothes, it's pure, but it's raspy, it's usurped. You have obtained it illicitly from mm-hmm. somewhere, or you've just got it from somewhere, stolen it, for example, then your prayer becomes void because you cannot pray with a stolen clothing.
Mm.
And then, and this is a general answer I'm giving. Otherwise, if you go into details, each and every issue that we discuss or we bring up in this episode might take time.
Has multiple scenarios.
Yes, yeah, scenarios, sure. Then, of course, if, for example, an incident happens, like, for example, you pray and then you, for example, during the prayer, you pass wind or you stop having the niyya, because niyya should be maintained throughout mm-hmm. the prayer. Your prayer becomes void. Or maybe you are showing off to other people while praying and your prayer becomes void. Or maybe you are crying for worldly purposes.
Yes.
Because you have lost your, for example, car or something, you just cry during prayer. This is crying for worldly purposes. Things
mm.
So your prayer becomes white. And of course, like then this is listed, if you counted it, it's number two in the list of things which invalidate the prayer.
Right.
Number three, if you, for example, pray with your back behind towards the Qibla,
mm-hmm.
not with your face towards the Qibla, your prayer becomes white. And then while praying, if you start speaking with someone, like you are speaking with someone as if you are not praying,
mm-hmm.
then your prayer becomes white. Because talking, laughing, giggling, you know, and all of these things make your prayers white.
What about crying?
Crying, of course, if you are crying out of fear for of God, because you think you have not fulfilled your duty towards Allah, you think you are not someone... an obedient person fearing God's persecution, God's punishment,
mm-hmm.
then that's not going to affect your prayer. Mm-hmm. There's no problem. There's no objection to you crying for other worldly purposes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you cry for worldly purposes, then your prayer definitely becomes void. Now, again, the scholars have said that, okay, if one of the conditions, very necessary conditions, is to offer your prayers with your hands on your sides, okay? And this is a disputed subject, and not among the scholars, but among Shia scholars, but among Sunni Shia scholars, okay? For example, the Sunnis, they fold their hands, they put the right hand on their left hand, and they put the entire hands folded on their stomachs.
Mm-hmm.
We, the Shia Muslims, believe that folding hands is not allowed, and it will make the prayer white because it was not mentioned anywhere or not practiced by the Prophet during his time. It was just done by the second caliph. He initiated this practice, and he did not have the right to do so, of course. So if a Shia Muslim folds his hand while praying, his prayer is affected, his prayer is made null and white. And then again...
Let me actually stop you there for a short break, and
sure.
then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws about the prayer based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Well, Sheikh Javed, you were talking about those invalidating agents, right? Or
yes.
Those things that invalidate the obligatory prayer.
Prayers, yes. I was saying that, okay, folding hands is not permissible under any circumstances, except when you are practicing taqiyya, you know. Mm-hmm. You, for example, you live in, a predominantly, let's say, Wahhabi or Sunni Muslim country, fearing death or maybe fearing loss of property or mm-hmm. something.
Yes.
So in order to safeguard yourself or your property or your owner and prevent any kind of damage, you practice taqiyya. Taqiyya means to hide your belief and act in the way the other Muslims act. Mm-hmm. So this is what taqiyya means. And so if you are doing taqiyya, folding hands is not a problem. Mm-hmm. And even doing sajda on something which is not allowed for sajda, like doing sajda on a piece of cloth or on a prayer mat made of wool, made of cotton, made of things like this,
yes,
will not affect your prayer because you are excused. And then as I said, of course, crying, laughing, and speaking with other people, these are the things which make the prayer worth. And then, for example, there are other acts, like if you are praying and in the middle of the prayer you start jumping up or down or clapping your hands, okay? Doing other acts, like for example, you're moving left and right, that these acts will make your prayer definitely white. And of course, eating and drinking make your prayer white. You have no right whatsoever to eat while praying, to drink a glass of water while praying, because you are praying, you are standing in front of God, and you must be doing what you are supposed to do. You should be praying, not eating, not drinking. And then there are doubts which invalidate the prayer. Of course, we have many, many doubts, some of which are valid, some of which are, should be ignored, and some of which obviously renders the prayer white. Of course, when it comes to doubts, we need to dedicate time to the doubts because this is not the right time to speak about the doubt. Mm-hmm. There are different scenarios. So, yes, about the doubts. And of course, it's one of the most difficult parts of the prayer. Mm-hmm. Because usually you forget what to do when you face a doubt during prayer.
Okay.
Now, then adding to the prayer and omitting something from the prayer. If you add to the prayer what is not part of the prayer, it's called bid'ah. Okay? Mm-hmm. For example, you recite a verse on your own accord or doing something, adding something to the prayer which is not part of the prayer, which is absolutely forbidden. No matter what you are adding, maybe you try to add a verse of the Quran, or you want to add a dua, which is not a part of the dua itself, is okay.
Yes.
But the prayer has its own format, it has its own special zikr or recitations. And of course, it does not accept any addition or omission. So we should not add anything to the prayer.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javed. Well, I enjoyed talking with you as always. And thank you very much for listening to the program Islamic Laws, in which we try to delve into some of the things that make the prayers void based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Thank you very much for listening to us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم ملجا لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو رحيم محيي مميت الأرض.
comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.